After 25 years in corporate, I'm currently taking time off formal employment to reflect, reinvent, and rejuvenate. This sabbatical was 10 years in the making, after deciding that I didn't want to go through another brutal company restructure. I'm pursuing my own interests and experimenting with how I want to spend my time into the future. Welcome to a new series of Unchange podcasts. In these episodes, I'm talking to people who have taken breaks from work for various reasons. I want to understand why they did it, what they did on their breaks, what they learned from the experience, and how they are taking the lessons learned from the experience back into their work lives. My guest today is Zahira Sumar. I first met Zahira when we were on the same executive development course at our previous employer. She is a business leader, independent consultant, and academic scholar. She has led various large-scale transformational projects across multiple industries. She has a number of business qualifications, including her doctorate through Haskayne Business School. She is a wife and mother and is passionate about promoting diversity and inclusion and tackling poverty and inequality. And she sits on a selection of boards and advisory committees focused on the issues she cares about. Welcome in the studio, Zahira.
Thanks, Petra. Good to be here.
Before we get started, I'd like you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you are doing now.
Sure. So I'm Zahira. I am originally South African. I'm now based in Canada with my family. I've been out of South Africa for the past 10 years. I've been in the workspace for the past 20 years. So actually, the end of last year marked my 20 years. And in 20 years, I've never taken a break. I've always been really scared to take a break, take a sabbatical, even take long leave when it was due. Even when I had all three of my kids, I was scared to take maternity leave. And this is the first time I've actually taken a sabbatical in my life, and I'm officially on a sabbatical, and that's what I'm doing.
Why did you take this break, and how did you know it was something that you needed or wanted to do?
I'll be honest, I'm not sure that I knew that I needed to do it at the time that I decided to do it. I now know that, and we can dig into that a little bit. But when I decided to take this break, part of it was circumstantial. It was the moment playing itself out and lending itself to the opportunity. I was also busy with my doctorate, and I had done around just over 3.5 years. And I was busy with my thesis for about a year leading up to that decision last year. I hadn't really worked on my thesis much or at all because of my work structure, my travel cadence, my family responsibilities. And there was this nagging feeling in the back of my head that I need to complete this. I'm one of these people that I really do need to complete something when I started, and it's a big sense of my achievement. And the more that time went on and the more that I wasn't doing anything on my thesis, the more this nagging feeling had. So when the opportunity presented itself, it was more circumstantial that, okay, I could use a break to complete my thesis. And that's also just how I justified it to myself to make it more palatable. My mindset's completely changed, though, in the way that I speak about my sabbatical now versus when I was in the moment, how I was trying to justify taking a potential sabbatical.
Yeah, it's like before you take a break, you have a whole bunch of reasons for why you want to take the break. You have, in my case, I had a fantasy. You know, I was going to rest. You know, my first thing was just I'm going to sleep for a month, and then I will figure out through a series of experiments what I'm going to do next. And some of that stuff is true. But there was definitely in my mind more of a fantasy of how I was going to spend the time versus how I actually spent the time. So your fantasy was I'm going to use this time to complete my PhD.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And a bunch of other things. I've had a number of things on my to-do list for a few years. I've never been able to get to it because I've been traveling and because I've been just working. Simple things like, honestly, I'm being very real now. My room was yellow, as in the paint, when I bought my house 6 years ago. And I've managed to paint the rest of the house or get someone to paint the rest of the house. And I painted my kid's bedroom. And I've always wanted to paint my room. I've just never had the opportunity. And for 4 years, sitting in my bed at night, I would look at this like dull yellow paint and it would bother me. And I said to myself, the first break that I have, I'm going to paint my room. And I'm not kidding you, on the 18th of January this year, I painted my room gray. It was the very first thing I did before I even did my thesis. It was the very first thing I did. So there were a bunch of these things that I, you know, they might sound menial and small, but there were a bunch of these things that I wanted to do for the longest of time and never ever had time to do it. And I said, I'm going to get through it. Part of generating this to-do list or having a reason was also part of me justifying why I was taking a sabbatical. It was also linked to kind of my self-worth. I struggled a lot with that. It's almost like I needed a reason to take a sabbatical in order to give myself permission to take a sabbatical. So I needed a to-do list because I needed a justification of what on earth I was going to do in this time.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that because if you've been with a specific company or corporate for a long time, your identity just does get tangled up into the work that you're doing. So it does take a bit of time to do the disentanglement of your identity and self-worth from the work and the company. Specifically, I completely get that.
Absolutely.
So when you decided you were going to take a break or you were going to leave the company, what did your friends and family, how did they react to you saying, I'm going to take a break?
Mixed feelings or variety of different feelings. My husband was very supportive. I mean, he's seen me work and he's seen how much I've always given to my career. And so he felt you're kind of deserving of this. So he was very supportive. My broader family, my siblings and my parents were also supportive of this, but there was also this concern of like, financially, are you going to be okay? Because you've built up this 20-year career of you being fully independent and fully financially capable and independent. And even a breadwinner for your family to some extent, what is that going to do to kind of the situation? You've got three kids. Two of them are school going, one is in university, you've got a house, there's still bills to pay, and it's great that you're taking time out. Like, you as a person deserve this, but like, what's the knock-on effect? So there was some of those discussions. And then friends, I would say mixed feelings. Some of them were really kind of, you deserve this. And some of them were questioning, saying, do you think that this is going to be okay? What will it do to your career? It's very hard for women to justify a break in their CV or in, their career, even when it comes to mat leave, when it's a very obvious, break that you should take. Even that sometimes can have an impact. So how is a sabbatical going to be seen, And all of these things, well, I think also partly what was driving me to have a reason and making me think about how do I explain this? Like, what's the justification for it? Like, you know what I mean? So yeah, I would say mixed feelings.
And did you have time to plan your leaving or do your leaving properly? And because, yeah, I mean, a lot of people have to leave in a very short period of time, but did you get some time to reflect and think about what it is that you want to do, except for making to-do lists?
I would say probably not. And I would say that that's probably circumstantial again. I think it wasn't a case of, look, in my situation, the organization was going through a restructure and I had decided to leave, right? It wasn't a case of everything around me was calm and I had decided to leave and therefore I could have these conversations and I could sit with it and think about it and plan it and then leave. It wasn't like that. It was the environment around me was chaotic. And there was so much going on with so many people. I didn't feel I had the opportunity to really sit and think about just myself and then also plan something out and also just be in the moment of thinking. There were so many shifts every single day that it was almost kind of you were kind of just going with it. It was just going with it. And honestly, in the moments decided to leave. And I think I did that based more on gut and feeling than anything else. And once I had made that decision to leave, and once I had formally kind of left and was then kind of weaning off or tapering off or just handing over, whatever the right words are, at that point, I would also say there were a lot of things going on and feelings that even then I wasn't properly planning. It was only once I hit my sabbatical that I actually sat down and thought, what am I going to do with this time properly?
also found it to be quite chaotic because you're looking out for other people. If you're going through a big corporate restructure, you're looking out for other people. You're making sure that your team's going to be okay at the end of it. Even though you yourself are planning to leave, you still have other people to look out for and make sure that they're going to be okay. And like you say, especially people who have dependents and absolutely need to stay, and you're looking out for them. But then what I also found with the leaving process is you very quickly realize who's on your side and who's not on your side, who's been basically making like they're your friend for the last 10 to 20 years in the company, and they're not actually your friend, you know, so they just wanted to get something out of you. So I think that that leaving process can actually be quite traumatic in firstly letting go of quite a lot of your personality, and also you letting go of people who you thought were actually looking after you, which actually weren't, you know, at the end of the day.
I think you summed it up well. I felt a very big sense of responsibility towards my team. Look, I'm living in Canada, and I felt a huge sense of responsibility to my team in South Africa. The economy wasn't as strong last year. A lot of companies were restructuring. There were a lot of people that were unemployed in the market. And all of a sudden, if you're going to get this influx of highly skilled, talented people into the market, it's going to make it hard as a next step. And so sometimes I was actually focused and caring more on them than I was on myself. And I have no regret for that. I think if I had to do it again, I think I would do it the same way, because I knew what I was made up of. I knew kind of my resilience factor, if I can call it that. So I knew that I'd be okay. I knew to be hard, but I knew I'd land okay. So I really just wanted to look after my team in that moment. And I fought for them. I felt, if I can use a word, and maybe this is hard or harsh, I felt disposable through that process, because when I got to the end of the process, I really felt you are just a number in an organization. And, you know, you were great when the organization needed you, and you felt disposable when the organization didn't need you, or when I decided this is no longer probably the right fit for me at this time, and I probably need to take a break or walk away or do something else for whatever reasons I had. I saw how things changed. I saw how people treated me. I saw the care that they took. I saw the conversations that they were willing or not willing to have. And it almost felt like, you know, okay, you've made a decision, so now you're disposed. That was also just a very harsh reality to deal with. And, you know, knowing that you give an organization loyalty and then this is how you kind of left feeling. But it's also something I told myself, remember this feeling, because when you next commit to something, know your worth and know what you're giving and know what you're getting in return. So there was just also a big learning in that moment as well for me.
I think it's also good to remember the feeling so that you're ever in the position where you have to do the restructuring, that you can be more humane about it. Just remembering how a certain organization made you feel in the leaving process. I think it can really inform if I were ever to decide to go back to a corporate, which is unlikely, but if I decided to go back and I had to do this process, there's ways to make it a little bit more humane than it can be. I mean, sometimes it can be really, really brutal, and we sometimes forget, you know, how this sort of stress lands on people. So we've gone through this process of disentanglement, or not quite yet, actually just made the step to leave. The disentanglement, I think, takes a couple of weeks even after.
It does.
Yeah. So how did those first days and weeks feel for you once you'd left?
I mean, I'll be honest, Petra, the first thing I did was towards the end of December, I went on pilgrimage. So my family and I, it wasn't planned. We weren't planning to go. But towards the beginning of December, I told my husband, you know what, I really just need this, because I was feeling low. I was feeling that feeling of being disposable, and it hurt. Like, I was feeling hurt, and I also think I went through a bit of trauma with the restructure. I've been through many restructures before, but I just feel this restructure really impacted me. And I don't know if it's because in this restructure, I mean, you and I were at similar levels in the organization. So, and we were at a pretty senior level. So I don't know if you feel it more when you're more senior, because you've played a role In the organization and shaping the organization to an extent. But my previous restructures didn't impact me in the same way. So I was feeling quite impacted. And so the very first thing I decided was I want to go on pilgrimage. I needed to just breathe. I needed to surrender. I needed to give into my faith. I needed to find inspiration. I just needed to be, you know, with my creator and kind of surrender a bit and just breathe. And I did that with my family, and it gave me a deep sense of, it made me feel okay. Like it gave me just, those 2 weeks gave me what I needed to feel kind of just breathe and be okay and connect with my creator. When I came back, I struggled. So the first few weeks were about really getting comfortable with the idea that I'm not working. It's the first time in my life I'm not working. I almost felt like a loss of purpose. I think because I tied a lot of my identity and my purpose to my work, I was living out my passion and living out my purpose through my work. So when my work stopped, it almost felt like that stopped. And I was wondering, like, who am I? What am I even doing? What is my purpose here? What am I achieving on a daily basis, you know? And I felt a bit of loss of identity. My self-worth was extremely low. I started questioning myself and wondering, did I do the right thing? Did I do the right thing for myself? Did I do the right thing for my family? I didn't yet start thinking about kind of next steps or what. I was just living in the moment. So I would say that a big part of January was my first month was just struggling with the fact that my purpose and my passion were tied to my work, and now it's kind of lost. My self-worth was low. My identity was being questioned, and I didn't know what I was getting up for every morning, apart from my family, but I didn't know what I was getting up every morning for. And I think that's where my to-do list started getting built. And I think part of the intention was to fill it so that I wouldn't sit in an idle state feeling and wondering all the things that I was feeling. So it was kind of a numb the pain type of thing. If I keep myself busy, I don't feel this pain. So I started filling my time with some of these remedial things on my to-do list, like paint my room, because it would fill my time. And I could feel some sense of self-worth and like that I was achieving something, I was doing something with my time. But, you know, you talk about the first month, I just wanted to sleep. I didn't give myself that permission. Like at that stage, I hadn't given myself the permission to just be. I was still very much in the mindset of, you've got to be doing something. You've got to be achieving something. You've got to prove your worth every day. What's your purpose? Like, what are you getting up for in the morning? What are you living for? I was still very much in that moment in the first month.
And when did that start changing?
I would say probably around 6 to 8 weeks in.
Mm-hmm.
I started at the beginning of Feb feeling I need to find a job, right? I can't be at home. This is not me. I need to be doing something. I started writing my thesis. So I was spending quite a few hours on my thesis every day. But I also knew my thesis, I had laid a timeline. So I had been very strict with myself. And I said, okay, I'm going to write my thesis the whole of Feb and March. In April, I'm defending because in June, I want to graduate. So that timeline was kind of set. And so while I was doing that, and I was doing that every day, I did say to myself, okay, so what happens when April comes and you've defended your thesis? What are you going to do then? Because your reason for your sabbatical is then over. So in Feb, I started thinking, okay, I should start applying for jobs, because at this level, when you're applying for senior roles, it does take a few months. And so, you know, you need to give yourself that few months. So I started applying for roles, and I started realizing very quickly that the economy, even globally and specifically even in Canada, was quite changed. There were a lot of retrenchments taking place in a lot of different organizations. The types of roles that I was interested in, there weren't too many of them. And a lot of those roles were actually the ones being retrenched a lot of the times. And so I had a bit of this, I don't know if it was a reality of like, oh my God, this is not going to be as easy to get back into the workplace as I thought it would be. But also while I was applying for roles, I felt a bit scrambled. I took a moment and I realized you're applying for these very different roles all over the show. And I felt a bit scrambled. And I told myself, no, you need to actually take the time to think about what it is that you want. And I had that realization probably 6 to 8 weeks in. So in Feb, I would say mid to late Feb. And that's when things actually started to change for me, because that's when I started, I think, giving myself permission to just be, to just regroup, rethink, reset, and not have to have it all figured out. And that's when I just started to breathe more and stop needing a justification as to why I'm on a sabbatical. And I started saying things like, I'm taking a break because I deserve one.
Mm.
And I don't know what I'm going to do in this time, and that's okay. And I don't know what comes next, but I'll figure it out, but that's okay. And it wasn't telling other people that, but it was my ability to tell myself that and feel okay with it. So I would say about 2 months in.
Yeah, I think it was about the same for me. I think that's when my partner said to me, I'm now in a space where I'm not trying to relax anymore. I'm actually am relaxed. Because you get, it's that whole thing of, I should be doing something. In the back of your mind, yeah, the whole time you're going, I should be doing something. And, but I'd made a very, very conscious decision not to fill my calendar up back to back with stuff. I had a couple of rules for my sabbatical. It was firstly, no back to back meetings, keeping space open for me to be able to be bored and think and be creative again and journal and just figure out who I am and who I want to be. And yeah, and I also decided that I wasn't going to drink any alcohol, because I wanted every single decision that I was going to make to be clear and focused on my next steps into the future. But I still also didn't give myself permission to sleep late. Okay, I had to get up early, go for a walk in the morning, you know, all of that. So I'm still maintaining some sort of schedule, because I think exercise is really important, right, for me. Okay, so it was for me, right, I have to do exercise. I have complete permission. I don't have to work. Okay, it's completely, right, okay for me to sit on the couch and read a book. It's okay. Okay. But it takes a while for you to settle into that. Okay. It takes, yeah, like I think it takes 6 to 8 weeks for you to actually, disentangle your identity from your employer and go, who am I, without being attached to this big corporate?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was exactly that. And then really start thinking about what brings me pure joy and what do I want to do? Like, what are the things that I'm really interested in doing? Yeah.
So what did you end up doing?
So I've landed up finishing my thesis as planned. February and March, most of my time I wrote, and I did other things, like I painted my room. There was a lot of DIY around the house that I've always wanted to get to. And that also brings me joy, because it's my home and it's improving our home. And I always feel when I give back to my home looks after me. So I'm a very big DIY type of person. So I did a bunch of things. I also spent time with friends. Because I had a really hectic travel schedule for the past 4 years, and even before that, I haven't always been able to kind of give dedicated time to certain friends. It's always been big gatherings. So I started having one-on-one coffee chats with my friends, just going out, honestly, just being, you know, and not having a clock telling me kind of this is the end of the coffee chat. You've got to leave. You got something else. It was kind of just being in the moment. So I did a lot of that during Feb, March, while I was writing as well. In April, I defended my thesis. So that was over and that was done. And I felt this huge sense of relief. That also in itself was a very big moment for me, because I had set this goal for my sabbatical of completing my thesis. My thesis was for me. My doctorate was for me. It was for nobody else. And I had reached that journey and I felt a big sense of accomplishment. That moment also helped me with my self-worth. Because if I wasn't getting it from an organization or my career, I was getting it from that moment that I was serving my purpose and I was serving things that were important to me and I was completing them. You know, it wasn't for the organization. It wasn't for anybody else. It was really just for me. And so I felt good about that. At that point, I also had decided, I think late Feb, early March, that I wanted to go climb another mountain. You and I talked a little bit about this last year as well. I had done a few mountains before and I just, last year, hadn't been able to because time was just so hectic and we were also going through the restructure and I wanted to do some of these things. So I decided I'm going to go and climb one of the mountains in the Himalaya. I'm going to take the time out. I wanted to do that. So I booked a trip. I started training for it. I had also a purpose of doing that. And I decided I wanted to do some humanitarian work in Egypt as well with all the refugees. So I added that onto the back end of the trip and I basically booked a month-long trip. So for the whole of May, I was basically gone. went and I climbed my mountain, went and I did some humanitarian work. And I was alone in doing that. It wasn't with my family. It wasn't with friends. It was amazing on so many levels. It was me and nature and my thoughts. That's it, you know? Mm. And it really made me feel so grounded, so comfortable, so at peace. Really, every day my aim was just, I had 10 plus kilometers to climb uphill and I had to just keep myself safe. And that's what I had to do. And that's all I set out to do. Every single day I had this like little goal of getting up this mountain. And I did that for 2 weeks. And then I went and I did my humanitarian work and I gave back to other people. This was not about me and it's not about my journey, but it's about other people. And I came back at the end of May and I felt like a different person. I felt growth. I felt rejuvenated. I mean, I felt a bit broken and exhausted as well, but I felt good. And I also felt like this was for me and I did this for me and for nobody else. And these are the things that I really wanted to do. So I did that. And soon after that, we had my graduation trip and I planned another trip with my family. And I think one of the things that I also really did in that time is spend time with my kids. Like I spent a lot of time with my kids doing the things that they wanted to do. For most of my career, I'm sad to say this, it's shameful, but I've been fitting my kids in. And this time I really could just dedicate time to what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I did a bunch of things and it felt great. Like it felt amazing.
You know, I'm a huge fan of solo adventures, really just to find who you are amongst mm-hmm. even a group of strangers or doing something that you are interested in, your partner might not be interested in. So I absolutely love solo adventures. And I keep encouraging my partner to also find some way of doing a solo adventure. So someday he might do that as well. But yeah, I mean, I did the same thing. In the whole of April, I was doing a yoga teacher training course in the Maldives with a whole Lovely. Bunch of people that I didn't know. And Amazing. Just swimming in the ocean. And snorkeling and just admiring beauty and nature and just being who you are amongst. It's something sometimes very freeing to be in a whole group of strangers who don't know you because you get to know yourself almost better by telling your story to them. Yeah, you actually rediscover yourself, which I think is really, really, really important. And that's why I've got another solo adventure planned for end of the year.
No, I agree. You know, when you talk about rediscovering yourself also. The common question everybody asks each other when you're climbing a mountain is, well, why are you climbing this mountain? Why this mountain and why are you climbing and those types of things? And I was very conscious. I took note of my answers. In the beginning, I would give these answers of what I thought was right. And towards the end, it was really just a very honest answer as to why on earth am I here on this mountain and climbing this thing? I'm never going to see you again. So I don't have to give you some pretentious answer or that sounds amazing. I can also just really tell you, I don't know. I feel lost. I just decided to do this. I need to reflect and just introspect and I'm here. It was kind of a spur of the moment thing. So yeah, I agree with you. I've got another one planned. I'm also leaving in 2 weeks' time. I grew so much in that journey that I think it becomes addictive. Honestly, I think that space becomes addictive.
I don't know if it's addictive. I think it's necessary. I think it is necessary because you sort of get back into your own skin again. And I love what you say around, in the beginning, you tell people what you think they want to hear, but you're not going to see these people again. So eventually you're just truthful to yourself. You're just like, this is why I'm here.
To be honest.
You just be honest because it's not as if these people are going to judge you or hold you to account or anything like that. So it makes sense. It's almost like freedom by talking to strangers, something like that.
Absolutely.
And maybe that's the title of a book. Yeah. So what surprised you? Are you still in your break? Are you still in a sabbatical?
Like, I am still in happening.
So what has surprised you so far about this whole experience?
A few things. I think one is how much of my self-worth I attached to the organization and the role that I was in and kind of just trying to reclaim that back and attach it to myself and what I've experienced and done and achieved in my life as opposed to attaching it to an organization or a role. So I've made that change, and I feel more, my self-worth is back up. I feel more validated, but validated by myself and by the people that love me, as opposed to being validated by an organization. So that's one. The second is, I think I've calmed down, and I don't know how to best to explain this, but I've always been someone that just needed to be doing something and getting something done and ticking off something. I don't have that need anymore. I don't have that need to be constantly chasing something or achieving something. I can go through a day now where I can say I was not productive and probably didn't achieve anything and feel absolutely okay. So I've given myself the permission to not be that constant overachiever that I've always been, and that's been great, and it's refreshing, and it's, I feel I've lifted a burden off my shoulder by not expecting myself to be that. So that was a change. I think the other big change is my view of sabbaticals and breaks. I had a very cynical view of taking a break or sabbatical. I've gone through my career always feeling that it was weak. Even when women took mat leave for like 12 months, I would be like, what are you doing for 12 months? You know, it's a really long time. It's going to impact your career. Why would you take 12 months for a maternity leave? I never took long maternity leaves. I always kind of needed to get back out there. I mean, I've always come across both men and women, and more women, that have taken breaks in their career because they wanted to be at stay-at-home moms for a period of time. You know, it was a choice they made. And I always questioned it. And I don't know that I supported or bought into it, or I didn't know that I saw it as positive. And my mind has shifted on that. I have a very different view on sabbaticals. I actually now feel it's probably a must. I think it's absolutely amazing, and I advocate for people taking sabbaticals every now and so often in your life, if not for to just regroup. But it also serves a purpose of realigning what you're really interested and passionate about in. So I would say the third thing is my view on taking a break, taking a sabbatical has changed. I've gone from being a cynic to being a very big advocate of it. I think the fourth thing is just the empowerment around giving myself permission. So I've also realized just how hard I was on myself in terms of my own expectations. These are not expectations that others placed on me, not an organization, not my spouse, not my parents, not my kids, not my friends, not my ex-colleagues or colleagues. These are expectations that I've placed on myself. And I've started asking myself, why? Why have you done this to yourself? Why on earth would you put yourself through this? And so I've become a bit softer with myself. I've granted myself permission to just be, to take breaks, to fall apart, to cry, to not have it all together. And I've just learned to be a bit kinder and softer to myself and not have to have it all together all the time. So there's a lot of other things that have shifted and changed, but I think those are the things that really surprised me, because I was so far onto the other side of the spectrum of these things that I've actually felt quite a big shift on these beliefs and like behaviors of mine.
Yeah, it's actually quite fascinating for me that it takes almost being forced into a break, either through a restructure or through completely burning yourself out or medical reasons for you to actually do it, because it might be seen as weak or a break in your career. And then I haven't spoken to a single person yet who has regretted taking the break. And I'm just so like, how do we normalize this? How do we make sure that it's something that's completely normal? Each corporate understands that their employees need to once in a while have a long break to be able to just refocus or just reevaluate for themselves whether they actually still want to do that type of work. But maybe a corporate doesn't want you to think about that. You know, maybe they don't want you to. They might just want you to keep working and not think too much. But yeah, I think we have to really reevaluate how we treat human beings, in the workplace. I think there's maybe better ways to do it. It sounds like you've found a lot of time to do some introspection and reflection. And what does that look like for you if you're doing introspection?
A few things. One is just sitting with myself. So not having something to do, not even reading a book, not even watching something, not being able to just tick off something, but it's just being able to sit, right? Calm my mind and just, number one, being able to sit. So that's for me part of introspection and reflection. It's just being in the moment. The second thing I think is being in tune with your feelings and what you're feeling. I've learned to kind of just close my eyes and feel what my body's feeling. So be in touch with what is your feet feeling? What are your legs feeling? What is your gut feeling? You know, what are your shoulders feeling? Like, where's your headspace? Just really being able to dig deep and feel what is your body feeling. I think the third thing is going a bit deeper to understand why you're feeling that way. So what's driving this feeling? If you're feeling stressed or anxious, if you're feeling a bit of press on your shoulders, what in this moment is driving that feeling? Like, is it, what are you worried about? Is it fear of something? Is it a worry? Are you, you know, are you worried about finances? Are you worried about how people think of you? What you, how you seen? Are you worried about being termed unemployed? Because that was a worry about for me as well at one point in time. So just trying to understand what's causing that feeling. And then trying to go even deeper, which is, what are your beliefs and your stigmas and your biases? That's the root cause of those feelings. Why are you worried about being unemployed? Like, what assumptions do you have in your head that's driving a fear of being unemployed? Because if you are financially stable and you've decided to take a break, then what's wrong with that? You know, so just basically being able to just take it, just in the moment, sit, take a step back, recognize beliefs, biases, assumptions that I have, and then making decisions of if I want to hold on to it or if I need to break it, if I need to let go of it, if I need to change that belief, if I need to prove it differently. So for me, that's a lot of my reflection and my introspection was just about that, really being in touch with myself, my belief system, why it exists. Do I actually believe it? What led me to that? And do I want to change it and challenge it? And do I want to have a different outlook on it? So that's been a lot of kind of that journey of, you know, being with myself. And part of it is also just bringing other people into it. So I would also at some points in time bring my husband into it and have a conversation with him and see if he has a different perspective. I would sometimes talk to friends and about certain things I was feeling. And so I would have a lot of conversations with different people, even my parents, but also just with myself.
Are you considering re-entering the workplace? And if you are, what are your plans?
I have to. I have 3 young kids. I have to financially kind of provide for them. So I feel I don't really have an option, because I do have to provide for them. I've kind of created a lifestyle for them. And I've also, you know, they're all going through education right now. We've also chosen to have kids. We also have a house. So there are responsibilities that we've signed up for. And I can't just poof, wish them away. Like, they do exist, right? Part of the introspection and reflection is also just conscious of, like, what exists that I have to do and I'm responsible for, and what are my choices? What can I waver on, or what can I make choices about? So look, I do need to earn, or at least as a household, we do need to earn, because we are putting kids through schooling and, you know, we are paying for a house, etc. But what I've deeply thought about is, what spaces do I want to be in? So, for example, one of the decisions I've made is I don't want to go back to corporate. I've worked in quite a number of corporates. I've also worked in mid-sized, smaller firms, and I've also worked in startup firms. Part of my introspection was also to just really think about those experiences that I had in each of those different spaces, in each of those different roles, and at what point was I happiest and felt at my best, and why, right? Was it simply just less pressure in the job, or was I more authentic to myself? Did I have more freedom and agility at work, which I love? You know, what lent itself? And so I have come out with certain conclusions around what I'm willing to go into in the workspace and what I'm not willing to. And also, where does my passion lie? Right? What do I see as my purpose? Where is my passion? And where do I want to continue giving my time, skill, talent to, and to kind of making a difference? So yes, I am in the process now of finding that next challenge for me. I am being particular, which I know means it does take more time. But yeah, I'm giving myself permission to be particular about the spaces that I put myself in, because I do genuinely now understand the link between where I work and what I do and how it ties to my happiness, and then how I show up in every other aspect of my life. And that's important for me.
Yeah, it is important because you've gone through the whole process of doing the sabbatical, which, well, for me, it's to become a different type of person, you know, to show up in the world in a different way, or to be in the world in a different way. So if you've gone to the trouble of doing all of that work and that introspection and thinking about what you want to do and how you want to show up in life, then to go back to exactly the same type of role that you were in is almost like self-defeating. I think your choices that you will make are probably a bit more well-informed with yourself in mind and your well-being and your mental health in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think people could return to the same type of role. And even like, and even in the same space, right? I could go back to a sustainability role in corporate, but I certainly think I would do it differently. I think people could go back to that same space, but the idea is to treat it differently, treat yourself differently. You would do it differently. If you're going to go back and do it all the same, I'm not sure if the growth is there. I'm not sure if the realization truly took place. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there might have been growth and there might have been realization, but and I think people could go back to the same space. But I mean, if I think about, you know, me going back to corporate or even that specific entity, not that I want to, but I know I would do it differently. I know I would behave differently. I know I would make decisions differently. I know I would treat myself differently. I know I would have conversations differently. So, you know, I would do things consciously differently.
Yeah, I remember as part of the leaving process, a new version of me was already starting to show up. So I said no to stuff I would normally say yes to. And that already started happening just by leaving. You already go, okay, I'm not actually going to stand for this anymore. And you start saying, no, that's not who I am. And you start, and then through the whole process of transformation, through going through a sabbatical, those things start being emphasized and you start to learning about yourself even more and more and more. And you know what you would like to do into the future. It's not necessarily actually about like, you know, I say what you would like to do in the future. A lot of people don't have a choice to say, I know I would like to do this. But even if you go into a job, for whatever reason you're going into it, at least you know what you stand for.
And
what you will put up with and what you won't put up with. And then you know what questions to ask in the interview. You know, when you get interviewed for something, you go, okay, well, I would like, then you have a lot of questions at the end. You know, when they ask you, do you have any questions? Yes, I do.
Yeah,
because you've thought about it. And I think 100%. That's good. Yeah.
100%. And I've noticed that as well. Look, and I mean, one thing I haven't talked about in this, or you and I haven't talked about is the privilege, right?
Mm.
It is a huge privilege to be able to take a break and take a sabbatical and be financially okay. It is a huge privilege to be able to put boundaries down and parameters down and say, I'm only going to go after this type of role. It is a huge privilege to do that. Many people in this world don't. They live paycheck to paycheck. They take what they can get. So one thing I've also through this whole journey is just realized my privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I come from a minority group, but within that minority group, I am extremely privileged, right? And so even in the broad scheme of the world, I do consider myself privileged for the things that I have and the choices that I do get to make, because many other people don't. So there's also been that learning in just like the privilege that we have to be able to do this. I think even if you have less privilege, one can still make certain choices. For example, if we forced to take a job that, you know, wouldn't necessarily want to take, you can still choose how to show up at that job.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still choose to say yes or no to certain things. And you can still choose to respect yourself. So I think there are certain things that fall on the side of privilege. But I think how we treat ourselves, how we respect ourselves, the level of self-worth, I think anybody can give that to themselves. I don't think that that's a privilege aspect. And so, but the situation or the circumstance that we're willing to put ourselves in or not willing to put ourselves in, I feel sometimes that is a privilege. And I do want to kind of recognize that as a privilege and appreciate it. I also just do appreciate it.
But I think there's a lot to be learned around how we treat each other as well. So you might become the manager of somebody who has to do a job. And through having gone through this experience, you could be a better manager. you know,
100%.
Yeah. And giving that person the time to be able to take breaks, to show up the best version of themselves, all of that. So there's a lot of lessons to be learned 100%. As well. So you're still in the process of, still a little bit of sabbatical left. My next question is around, how are you planning to take the lessons that you've learned from the sabbatical back into the workplace?
Look, I've started interviewing with a few organizations. I've got a trip planned in 2 weeks' time, and I'm going to be away for about a month again. So I'm at least going to be on sabbatical until kind of mid-September. But I am in the process of talking to a few organizations to kind of come back into the workplace, you know, soon after that, so September, October side. I've started doing things differently. So one is the roles that I'm interested in, the organizations that I would be interested in. It's very thought through. I've actually gone through and made a list of really looking deeply into organizations, their values, their purpose. Does it align with my value and my purpose? Is there an in sync or an alignment there? And so I've gone through a bit of that process. I've also deeply thought about the type of roles and why those types of roles and what does success look like for me? What impact do I want to have? And then I've started reaching out to people more intently and purposefully around forming connections. So now that I'm in the interview stage with a few organizations, I also find the way that I'm conducting the interviews different. How I talk about the sabbatical, why the sabbatical, I actually talk about it very openly in my interviews. And I don't hide the fact. I think previously I probably would have tried to hide the fact that I'm on a sabbatical or not really kind of brought any attention to it. I'm very open about it now. And I'm like, this is great. It's been amazing growth for me. I talk very openly about it. That's a first change. The second change is I find I'm interviewing them as much as they are interviewing me. This needs to be a mutual benefit for both of us. You need to want me, but I also need to want you as an organization and even the kind of the hiring manager, right? I find the questions that I'm asking in these interviews are different to the questions I've asked before. It's less about the skill-based questions, but it's more about the culture, the fit, how you make decisions, what do you really intrinsically care about? You know, how do you see your employees? How do you see your people? I've been asking those types of questions. So, you know, just things that I've found in this past year that I actually deeply care about and deeply impact me, I started asking about those things. And I find when I negotiate, I'm negotiating on things that I never negotiated before. So I've never really had to negotiate on salary, but like most people have to negotiate on salary. That's usually the first negotiation point. Can we land on a good salary that we both agree with and benefits and bonuses, etc.? I find I'm negotiating more on things like flexibility. Can I be flexible in where I work, how I work, when I give my thinking time, etc.? Can I work remotely? If I wanted to go spend a month in this country and I'm happy to work there, could I do that? You know, I'm finding that I'm asking those types of questions. And part of it, it's because I've really just, you know, it's, I think similar to you, we've explored this year, right? We've gone abroad, we've lived, and I've just appreciated the beauty of that time. And I don't want to lose that. And I don't only want to get that when I go on a next sabbatical, take a break. I want to try and build some of these things that I've really loved in this time into my daily practice or into my normal routine. So yeah, I'm approaching things differently. I don't know where I'm going to land, but I hope that because my approach is different, I hope that I'm going to land a little bit closer to what's going to serve me well than what I did before.
And now that you've changed your views on sabbatical and it's no longer a sign of weakness, do you think you might do sabbaticals again in the future or maybe be a bit more lenient to people who are reporting to you who want to take sabbaticals?
Both. I think both. I think I'd definitely be a lot more supportive and encouraging for people who want to take it that are reporting to me. I think I would show up in that conversation very differently and very supportive. Even things like maternity breaks and things. Not that I never supported that, but I think my view on it has all changed. When I see people burning out or potentially needing one, I might even suggest it and say, hey, have you ever thought of taking a break? Like, I've been through one. It's rejuvenating. Let's talk through it. Have you ever considered one? So I actually think I might advocate a little bit for it. For myself, absolutely. I am already dreaming about the day that I can take another one. And financially, it's being built in. And I, you know, I was talking to my husband the other day and we were talking about, okay, you know, I'm looking for a role financially. What do we have to agree to in order to kind of, you know, let's agree on what number that looks like at a minimum so we pay our bills. And I said to him, and I want more because I'd like to save for the next time I want to take a break and we can financially cover that break because that's important to me. And I'm already thinking about, you know, at least a couple of years down the line, I don't feel like I need to leave work for it, but it's like, you know, every 3 years, take a 2 months break and it's a long leave essentially. Go and, you know, just shut off it. I also feel it gives people the opportunity to step up. Your team to step up. So really, yeah, I absolutely want to build it in.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, I think if the company I was working for had given me a sabbatical maybe a bit earlier, then I might not have left, although I'm not sure. Okay, I can't say that for sure. And I'd actually broached the subject. I had asked my manager when I started whether in 2 or 3 years' time I could potentially take 3 months off, and he actually said yes. But then when a restructure starts happening, then all of those things are off the table. There's no more sabbaticals. You can't, in the middle of a restructure, say, oh, but I wanted to take a sabbatical. There's no ways that that's going to work. So is there anything else you'd like to mention that we haven't spoke about yet?
I know you mentioned at the beginning, most of the people you've been speaking to are females. I do think that there might be a gender aspect to this that plays out in terms of, I mean, I certainly can see how, you know, when women take maternity leaves and potentially how it impacts one's trajectory or career because of how it's seen sometimes. I'm quite curious to see what you come out with in terms of like your data or your insights around how is it viewed when a male takes a sabbatical versus a female takes a sabbatical. And maybe you do a survey. I don't know. It would be good to see some data points around this, but I mean, my view is not without knowing those data points or those insights. My view is I certainly would advocate for both. You know, I think it's regardless of your gender, regardless of your hierarchy, regardless of kind of how long it's been, I certainly would advocate for people taking a break when it's needed and maybe even fleshing out what are the signs of a sabbatical being, you know, what are the signs of a looming sabbatical that's needed? Like you mentioned a few, like, are you burnt out? Is it at a point of a retrenchment? You know, is it at a pinnacle point of realigning what your purpose and your passion is in life because you're just not feeling satisfied or fulfilled? Do you need to kind of regroup? But I would advocate for both, you know, giving ourselves permission to do that.
Yeah, it's been interesting that the first couple of interviews have all been women so far. But I do have a couple of men lined up. Okay. So there will be at least be a couple of episodes. I'd love to hear what the differences are. I mean, that's definitely going to be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm keen to see what comes out of those and if the feeling or the sentiment's different, and what we can learn from that.
Yeah, I mean, what would you do now if your husband said to you, I want to take a sabbatical in 18 months' time?
He's actually, I mean, our personal journey's been very different, Petro. He's actually, we know when we left South Africa, we were both in corporate in South Africa. And when we moved to Dubai 10 years ago, I moved for my role, my job. It was a big move and it was a big commitment that he was also making for me and my kids. And at that point, he said to me, I don't want to go back into the workplace. I want to try my own things. And I said, okay. I said, go for it, you know. And so for the past 9-10 years, he's been doing a bit of this and that and running his own businesses. And I don't want to say that that's a sabbatical, but it is. I've taken the pressure off him financially to provide anything. And he's had free rein to kind of do what he wants to and follow his passions or even do nothing. So I would say he's had a 10-year sabbatical.
I think I need to get your husband in the room and ask him what he thinks.
I don't know if you'd describe it as a 10-year sabbatical. No, I mean, he hasn't been sitting and doing nothing. Not that a sabbatical is doing nothing, but he certainly hasn't had the pressure of having to be in a job, bringing certain things to the table. And I don't know if I've been supportive of it because he's been supportive of my journey, and so I've been supportive of his journey. That's how I felt through this past 10 years. Like, you supporting my academic and career goals, even when it requires us to move different countries and I travel all the time, the fact that you supporting and the fact that I could do my MBA and my doctorate while being married and having kids, you fully supported that. And therefore, if this is what you want to do, you know, it's not something I would do, but if this is what you want to do, go for it. You know, this brings you happiness. So, yeah.
It's about choosing how you want to be in the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you do need a support structure as well.
Yeah.
For a lot of things that we decide to do as strong, independent women.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. It was so lovely to see you again and to speak to you again. So Likewise. Thanks very much for joining me in the studio.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.